The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Jesse McKinley, always on the run, the Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Times. Welcome back, Jesse. I can't tell you how flattered we are to have you with us again. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely, Alan.
Okay, so Cuomo is now dealing with the COVID-19 and civil unrest over George Floyd's murder at the hands of Minneapolis police. Well, the state numbers are going down and the state is reopening. Peaceful protests across the state have also brought looting and violence. And in New York City, the governor blamed Mayor de Blasio for not deploying enough police to deal with the situation. What do you make of that continuing contentious relationship between the two guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been obviously no lack of kind of animus between the two men over the years. And I think certainly a crisis will bring out both the good and bad in people. I think in this specific instance, the governor was probably taken aback by the looting that happened on Monday night and seemed to be looking for a target to blame. You know, he took it out on not only Mayor de Blasio, but also on the New York City police, which was the thing that kind of struck me as remarkable, considering the traditional role of a governor and any, you know, leader in the state of supporting local law enforcement. And then, of course, later in the day, one of his senior advisors, Rich Azzopardi, a former student of yours, had to issue a statement basically walking that back somewhat,
yeah,
saying that they wasn't criticizing the police per se, but the management of it. But I think for the rank and file police officers, that distinction may have been lost.
Well, what do you think? I mean, is this just a continuation of the personal animus between the two guys, or do you think Cuomo had a point? I mean, one of the things he said, right, was that if he had to, he could take over the city because the city is a creature of the state and he has that power. That was a remarkable statement.
Yeah, that was a remarkable statement. I think that was the first time, certainly, that I have heard a governor make that sort of proclamation, although he may have kind of floated a similar idea last year. I think depending on your view of the governor's intentions, that was either just kind of philosophical musing or a shot across the bow. You know, the governor has thought and has intervened in city affairs on multiple occasions. He obviously feels that he has a good grasp on what's wrong with the city and how to fix it, and has not been shy about, you know, imposing his will and or making his opinions known. And I think this was a case of that. You know, he wanted to make sure that de Blasio knew that, you know, this was conceivably within his powers. I don't think he actively entertained it or would ever do it. I think the uprising in terms of public opinion against such a move would be enormous, but it certainly was notable that he noted it.
He certainly said it. He said to me on the air the other day, he said, you know, this is the governor now, he said, you know, this job is going to kill me. I was struck by that, meaning, you know, I said, no, I'll die first. And we had this little conversation, which was humorous, but he was... I think I've never seen anybody work as hard as he is.
I've certainly thought my job would kill me as well. I mean, I think that's a common, I think that's a pretty common affliction for people in all walks of life. I mean, jobs are jobs and jobs are hard. But keep in mind, the governor did ask for this job three times from the voters of the state of New York. He was reelected most recently in 2018. So. He certainly wants to be governor, and you know, it is a big job. And right now, it's certainly the intensity of, you know, dueling crises of a global pandemic and civil unrest in the streets of the nation's largest city. I'm sure that's a lot to deal with. But by the same token, you know, this is a guy who seems to thrive on emergency situations. He seems to really like disaster scenarios. Even before these twin crises emerged, you know, he was the first guy to kind of break out the snow shovel every time there was a blizzard, or jump out of the car to save, you know, stranded motorists, that sort of thing. This is, you know, he seems to like to don the cape, as it were, to kind of jump into rescue mode. So, you know, he may be tired, but I think he's certainly, you know, this is something that he thrives on.
I agree completely. Let me ask you this. Does his relationship with Trump puzzle you at all? It puzzles me. I mean, he goes every once in a while take a shot at Trump, but for the most part, he's loath to do that. He needs the money from the feds to the state. He has hope grows eternal that he'll get what he needs. So he has to be somewhat careful, right?
Yeah, it's a balancing act. You know, I questioned him about this on Wednesday. It is, mm-hmm. you know, he simultaneously is willing to criticize him on issues like the salt tax and the trusted traveler program and things like that, but then at the same time has to kind of bend the knee in order to get federal aid for things like, you know, the coronavirus response, whether it be the hospital ship or the, you know, retrofitting of Javits to kind of take hospital patients. And keep in mind, the biggest ask that is going on right now is that the state desperately needs federal funds to kind of backfill a huge budget gap. And obviously, the governor's relationship with Mitch McConnell has not been peaceful. They have traded a lot of swipes back and forth. And so in terms of, you know, getting some sort of federal support for the state to fill that $13 billion gap, that is a big ask. And he is going to need federal help. And just to kind of plumb the relationship between Cuomo and Trump, I think that these two guys have known each other for 30 years. I think they both grew up in New York City. They both grew up in the kind of, you know, the rough and tumble New York City political scene. I don't think either one of them is shy about taking swipes at the other. But then at the same time, realizing that, you know, it's just politics, guys. And I think that's an attitude, you know, of both of them, that, you know, you hit me, I hit you back, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, we have to work together. And the governor has said as much in public statements. But once again, you know, as pressures rise, as the political season progresses, it'll be interesting to see whether that relationship transforms at all.
Okay, so now, Jesse McKinley, Cuomo says the virus should be a no politics zone. But by definition, isn't everything a governor or even a newspaper does political?
Well, you know, he has said that this is a no politics zone, but it's a tricky issue, right? Because, you know, what is policy and what is politics? You know, if he is criticizing a Republican president, Donald Trump, for not doing a better job or criticizing federal agencies that are led by, you know, Republican appointees and things like that, is that a political act or is that merely a policy discussion? You know, once again, that's something that someone has to kind of decide on their own. The governor has been critical of federal response on this. He has, by and large, avoided, you know, of fighting with the president by name, with the exception of a couple of weeks ago when the president tweeted during one of the governor's press conferences, and that resulted in a pretty brusque exchange between the two of them. But then even after that, the governor stepped forward and said, oh, no, you know, this is not it. I'm not picking a fight with him. I don't want to have a fight with him. He wants to have a fight with me. We're not going to have a fight. So he has tried to balance and maybe parse the difference between criticizing policy and criticizing federal policy very stridently at times and trying to stay out of the kind of like, well, Republicans are all bad, blah, blah, blah. And so that's a very fine line to walk, and he's been trying to balance that.
Now, I want to talk to you about 50A. Everybody's talking about 50A, which is the law protecting police records. Now, Cuomo told me, that, you know, we can look at police records, that this 50A repeal doesn't have to happen. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that once again, that's a balancing act. I think that he does feel the pressure to do some sort of reformation of 50A, particularly in the light of, you know, the issue of police brutality and systemic racism and law enforcement being, you know, a very hot issue right now in the wake of the George Floyd murder. So you know, there is going to be enormous pressure in Albany. The state legislature is due back here next week. I think 50A will be at the very top of their list of priorities. And just for listeners who don't understand what that is, it basically would allow some transparency into police discipline records so that you would know if cops have had trouble with brutality or other sorts of offenses. And 50A basically shields them from that. So this would, to reform that or repeal that law, it would allow, you know, the public to know whether or not you've got a bad police officer in your ranks. So I think there'll be enormous pressure, particularly amongst reform-minded Democrats in the Assembly and in the Senate to do something on that. And the governor has, you know, indicated that he's listening and that he's willing to take that up. And in fact, has said, I'll sign whatever they send to me, basically. Though, once again, you know, once you get into negotiations over the kind of details of this, you know, the devil will be in those details. So we'll see what happens.
Now, the police unions have a tremendous amount of power in New York, Jesse, as you know, and they have disciplined other people like Mayor de Blasio, who came in with a tougher attitude about police and sort of had a back off. Will that happen here?
It will be interesting to see. I mean, obviously, on Monday, after the governor criticized the NYPD pretty harshly, said basically they fell down on the job, that they did not protect the city on Monday night. You know, I think he probably heard it from either rank or file or certain union officials. And there are indications that he called Commissioner Shea in New York and either apologized or at least tried to explain that he wasn't criticizing, you know, the actual rank and file officers, but was criticizing, you know, the way that they were deployed, i.e. Mayor de Blasio. So he was trying to once again walk this fine line of like telling the cops that they didn't do a good job, but also, well, it wasn't your fault. You were put in the wrong place or you weren't out in the numbers you needed to be out in order to kind of defend the city. But certainly it caught the ear of union officials who are powerful political forces in this state.
You better believe it, yeah.
Like Ed Mullins and Pat Lynch, you know, those are big mouthpieces. Those are big megaphones that they have. And if they decide to turn on a political official of any stripe, it can be bad news, and they can bring a lot of force to bear, both in kind of forming public opinion and also, you know, political action. So, I'm certain that the governor is sensitive to that.
We're talking to the always eloquent and on the spot, Jesse McKinley of the New York Times. What happens if we do get a second wave of the coronavirus? Are we ready for that?
That's a fantastic question. You know, that has been a warning that has been sounded from high and low. You know, the governor certainly warned about that. Other governors across the United States have warned about that. Public health officials have warned about that. And I think everyone's keeping a very close eye on the data, you know, and trying to figure out whether or not that second wave comes. And, you know, with covering the virus, one thing that it is always useful to remember is that the reason they call this a novel coronavirus is that it is novel. It is new. So we're still learning about it. We're learning about it scientifically. We're learning about it in terms of transmission. We're learning about it in terms of, you know, whether or not it is seasonal and whether or not it could potentially mutate. And so I think the frustration, both from public officials as well as from the press, is there are no hard and fast answers. So would there be a second wave? Conceivably, yes. You've seen spikes in other places where, you know, social distancing and other measures have been relaxed. But once again, we're dealing with something completely new here. So it's difficult to say. But I think that's the fear of, you know, Cuomo as well as other people across the United States, is that you'll tamp this down. It'll seemingly fade. People will begin to relax. They'll begin not to take social distancing as seriously. And then all of a sudden you'll be dealing with the same thing all over again come September or October.
So, Jesse, I guess when I see all of these people protesting together, many of whom don't have masks on, one wonders whether that COVID is amongst them.
Well, I don't think you're alone in that concern. I think, you know, Governor Murphy in New Jersey and other, you know, Governor Cuomo here in New York and other places have certainly made the point that could potentially be a problem going forward. You know, but keep in mind, when you watch television and you watch these protests, a lot of the protesters do actually have masks on. They may be closer than 6 feet, but some of them are certainly wearing masks. Many of them, I think, are certainly wearing masks. So hopefully that would keep any potential transmission down. But once again, you know, I think in all of this, the message of these protests is much more about, you know, racial inequality and systemic racism and police brutality. And to that message is partially being delivered by the sheer number of people, right? That you have thousands of people in the street asking for these things, demanding these things, and that message in and of itself requires a lot of people to be in, you know, one place. So it kind of stands in opposition to social distancing guidelines. But I think for the protesters themselves, their message is in their numbers, right? So they are kind of taking a calculated risk that, you know, by getting that close, they are sending the message they absolutely feel they need to send, which is that systemic racism has to end in America.
Now, back to Governor Cuomo, I have to say, I'm getting a certain amount of mail from people I would describe just to the left of the regular social group who are very critical of any remarks by anybody condemning people from stealing and breaking into stores and saying this is just a legitimate mark of frustration. Now, I know that they feel that way, otherwise they wouldn't be writing me letters. I don't agree with it. And I've said so to some consternation on the air, but the governor has certainly made his feelings about that pretty plain, right?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty cut and dry issue, you know, and I think the governor's been consistent and other political officials have been consistent that peaceful protest is, of course, a cornerstone of democracy. It is something that, you know, has led to enormously important social change across the board. But by the same token, you cannot loot. Looting is different than protesting. Looting is destruction of property and or people, you know, people's property. And that's the bright line there, right? That becomes legal behavior. And I think, you know, no one is actually trying to squelch protests in this country, except in kind of weird isolated incidents. But they are trying to squelch, you know, illegal destruction of property and or people's homes or people's businesses or things like that, because that is illegal. And I think the governor has been consistent about that and other public officials have been consistent about that. But that's a delicate line to walk, right? Because in the heat of a protest, some people do bad things, you know, and that goes on protests from the left and protests on the right. So, you know, once again, it is a delicate balance that the governor and law enforcement is trying to strike in both allowing people to express their frustration and their outrage and also trying to safeguard people's property and homes and businesses.
We're talking to Jesse McKinley of the New York Times. Jesse, the budget. You got a budget, but of course it means nothing when you think about it, because Cuomo is depending on the feds to give the states money. In the meantime, school budgets are being passed all around New York State. And Cuomo's talking about a 20% cut in education if he doesn't get the money. What about all of that?
Well, you know, I think you put your finger on it. The big question here, the kind of open question, is whether or not the feds are going to step up and backfill an enormous hole in the New York State budget. And that is an open question. I don't think there's any hard answer on that. The governor has threatened, as you mentioned, a 20% cut across the board. That would be disastrous, I think, for a lot of school districts and a lot of local governments. And so I think they're holding their breath. But keep in mind, the governor had initially said that these cuts could be coming as soon as mid-May. He has not implemented those. He seems to be, you know, having a wait-and-see attitude as to whether or not the feds will kick some money down to New York. But once again, the clock, she ticks, you know. So eventually these hard decisions are going to have to be made. And I don't think anyone wants to make those cuts, and certainly the governor doesn't want to make those cuts, and local officials don't want to see those cuts. But at a certain point, you know, they will run out of time. And if the Senate, led by Mitch McConnell, doesn't come up with the money, that will be a painful day for a lot of New Yorkers.
Well, now, you're one of the smartest guys I know. I'm not trying to butter you up, but you are. So just tell me, will he get the money out of the feds or not?
Well, first of all, I think you need to meet some more people, because I'm certainly not one of the smartest guys you know. But I think the feds will be under enormous pressure not to tell New York to drop dead, you know. And that's obviously a reference to the famous 1975 Ford headline in the New York Daily News, where he basically said, you know, the city was about to go bankrupt, and sorry, guys, we're not going to help you out. And I don't think anyone wants that headline. I don't think Mitch McConnell necessarily wants to say New York dropped dead. But on the other hand, these are much different times, and these are hyper-partisan times. And McConnell's rhetoric has not indicated that he's exactly chomping at the bit to help out New York. So, you know, it will be, I think, an 11th hour thing. And I think to an extent, maybe Donald Trump will be able to influence this decision by, you know, whether or not he's taking it on the chin politically. But, you know, I don't think this is going to be an easy sell by any stretch of the imagination, because these are hyper-partisan times. And I think that the Republicans have made it very clear that they think that New York City is mismanaged and that New York State is somewhat mismanaged. And they've taken shots at him on Twitter. By him, I mean Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio. And I think that sort of rhetoric indicates that, you know, there's a lot of pent-up frustration from Republicans who feel like they shouldn't have to, you know, pay for what they feel is, you know, past fiscal mismanagement by the state of New York. So I do think this will go right down to the wire.
But when it's at the wire, the question is who blinks, obviously. You know, $13 billion deficit, that's a lot of money. I remember when Cuomo had a $6 billion deficit he was looking at. Now it's $13 billion, and I suspect it's more than that. And how does a governor cope with a $13 billion deficit?
There's only two ways traditionally of dealing with the deficit. One is raising revenue, i.e. taxes, and two is cutting spending. And the third option here, obviously, is the federal rescue, you know. But those are really, you know, there's only basically three ways to take care of this. Either someone sends you a check, you cut your expenses, or you find ways to get more money. And I think that from some Democrats in the Assembly and the Senate, the one option would be to raise taxes on the rich. This is a crisis time, and that they feel that the rich should do more to kind of backfill that gap. But there's no indication as of yet that the governor would want to support that, because, you know, he feels that if you raise taxes on the rich, people run out of state, and then your tax basin kind of collapses, and then you're in deep water the next time the next time the income tax starts to come in, and as well as the business tax.
Is there real trouble between the governor and people like Carl Hastie, the more liberal, I think, speaker of the state assembly? I mean, is Hastie in any position to really fight with this governor?
I don't know Hastie per se, but I think there is certainly upset in some parts of the state Senate, where you have some more progressive lawmakers who were elected in 2018 who simply feel like this is a no-brainer, that taxes should be raised on the wealthy, and that should help backfill this deficit. I think Hastie certainly has a lot of progressives in his ranks. But they have made it clear for, you know, several years running that they feel that the millionaire's tax that they have floated should be passed and adopted into law. So I think the real point of contention will probably be between the Senate and Governor Cuomo. So that will really be the flashpoint.
And why the Senate? The Senate, in fact, is run by Andrea Stewart Cousins, as opposed to Hastie. Hastie, we know, is a liberal fellow who wants to raise taxes. And the Senate?
Well, I think, once again, as I was pointing out, you know, you've got an issue of young progressives that are elected to that body in 2018. Who feel very strongly that progressive values require taxation on the wealthy in order to help raise revenue, and also to kind of, you know, have equitable taxation. You know, that people middle class has to pay taxes, and that the wealthy should pay an equal share, a proportionate share to their income, in order to help backfill these programs which are being threatened with cuts. So I think that there are, you know, a cadre of young progressive lawmakers, particularly in that body, that really want to get this done. And I think that will really be the point of contention, particularly if you see this 20% across the board cuts.
Okay, so the question is voting by absentee ballot. How's that going in New York?
The governor has indicated that people will be able to get absentee ballots, that, you know, the vote by mail system will be certainly a safer option in the age of coronavirus. Republicans led by Donald Trump have started to already raise hackles saying, well, this is potentially a fraudulent system, although, of course, a lot of Republicans have been in support of vote by mail in the past. So, you know, New York was a little bit late to the party on expanding absentee voting and early voting in particular. We'll see. I mean, the one interesting thing to watch is that there will be an election in late June, a special election in the 27th congressional district near Buffalo, which will be the kind of first, electoral task of not only, I think, some of the early voting and how that impacts the results, but also it should be an interesting bellwether as to, you know, whether or not that seat, the 27th, which is a predictably kind of, reliably Republican district, could potentially switch to a Democratic district. And that'll be interesting to see, how the Democrats fare in that seat. So I think that'll be watched not only locally there in the 27th, but also nationally.
Jesse McKinley of the New York Times with us again on the Capital Connection. Jesse, I can't tell you how wonderful it is to have you with us, and thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, guys.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.